It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Nigeria's president grapples with a rising insurgency. Algerians go to the polls today to choose a president. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan meets with his national security team today in the wake of a series of attacks carried out by suspected Islamist militants, including the abduction Tuesday of more than 100 schoolgirls in northeast Borno State. A presidential advisor says Mr. Jonathan will review security measures and operations with a view of determining the best way forward. Late Wednesday, Nigeria's Joint Information Center said only 8 of the abducted students were still missing. In a VOA interview, Nigerian Union of Teachers Chairman Dauda Mina pleaded for all the students' safe return and for the government to improve school security. There were no initial claims of responsibility, but the assault is similar to attacks that have been carried out by the group Boko Haram. The incident took place on the same day a bomb ripped through a crowded bus station in Abuja, killing at least 75 people. Wednesday, the Associated Press reported gunmen attacked a village in northeast Nigeria's Gwoza district, killing nearly 20. Ugandan officials say some 400 troops will be deployed in Somalia today under a new UN guard unit charged with protecting UN staff and installations in the violence-prone Somali capital, Mogadishu. Barry Onkunda is an Ugandan army spokesman.
Their mandate is different from that of the African Union mission in Somalia, AMISOM. Theirs will be to provide static security to UN personnel and installations, and also provide escort and other security-related issues. The security of UN personnel and installations now is going to be handled separately. That will free the AMISOM forces, who have been providing similar services to the UN, to pursue the Al-Shabaab.
Dressed in blue UN helmets and Ugandan military fatigues, the troops were urged to show discipline in a ceremony Wednesday witnessed by their Western trainers. Algerians head to the polls today to choose a president. Incumbent 77-year-old Abdelaziz Bouteflika is widely seen as winning a fourth term in office. On the eve of the ballot, the capital city Algiers was covered in campaign posters from 6 candidates. This Algiers resident, Mahmoud, says he'll choose Mr. Bouteflika because he is a president we can trust. He is our president and we don't need someone else. This is our country, he says. We want peace. Long live Algeria. However, this Algerian, Habib, says no one will vote. The results, he says, are already known. What's happening is an electoral masquerade. To be honest, he says, we can't call this an election and no one will vote. Mr. Bouteflika, who has been in power since 1999, has remained largely out of the campaign as he suffered a stroke last year. Supporters say he can keep the country stable. Critics say he's too weak to govern effectively. Several parties have joined forces calling for a boycott of today's ballot. Guinea-Bissau's presidential election is to go to a second round scheduled for May 18th. José Mário Vies of the African Party for the Independence of Guinea-Bissau and Cape Verde captured over 40% of Sunday's vote, while Nuno Gomes Nambiam garnered 25%. Nearly three-quarters of eligible voters in Guinea-Bissau cast ballots in what's viewed as a watershed election aimed at ending decades of instability. The South Sudanese army reportedly has acknowledged the loss of the capital of oil-producing Unity State to rebel forces of former Vice President Riek Machar. Rebels claimed Tuesday to have recaptured Bientou. They had seized the town in December but were ousted the following month. An army spokesman accused the rebel forces of committing atrocities, including the killing of civilians. The conflict, which erupted in December, has left thousands dead and forced some 1 million from their homes. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon warned Wednesday that those refugees are at risk of famine. He called for an end to the fighting and a political resolution to the conflict. An international team of scientists says the Ebola virus that has killed more than 120 people in parts of West Africa is a new strain, and the source remains unknown. Earlier, health officials suspected that it was the Zaire strain of Ebola. Researchers suspect the Guinea strain of the often deadly disease evolved in parallel from a recent ancestor virus. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News. More can be found at our internet website, voanews.com.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United Nations seeks millions of dollars to help refugees from the Central African Republic.
We identify more than 1,000 children, which seems to indicate that, obviously, and as we imagine, that a lot of people have left under a lot of stress and in a hurry for their protection.
Manuel Fontaine is UNICEF Regional Director for Western Central Africa. The Democratic Republic of Congo's government is concerned about the continued violence in the CAR. Experts meet to make African elections less prone to challenges, and South Sudan rebels capture Bentiu and deny they are getting help from neighboring Sudan.
They are the ones who have an agreement with Sudan. Now, how come they turn around to allege that we receive support or training from Sudan? We don't receive support from any country, including Sudan.
James Gadet Dark is the spokesman for South Sudan opposition leader Riek Machar. The sixth interim leader during Liberia's civil war has died. And Global Witness calls for an immediate investigation into the shooting death of Virunga National Park director. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Fifteen United Nations and private humanitarian agencies are appealing for $274 million to fund emergency aid for people fleeing violence in the Central African Republic. Nearly 200,000 people have fled the CAR since December, but the UN says it expects that the number to grow to more than 360,000 by the end of the year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The funding will meet the acute needs of refugees from the Central African Republic who have escaped to neighboring Cameroon, Chad, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the Republic of Congo. It also will benefit thousands of returnees and third country nationals, mainly from Chad, Cameroon, and Congo, whose families had settled in the CAR. UNICEF Regional Director for West and Central Africa Region, Manuel Fontaine, says CAR refugees, mainly women and children, arrive in countries of asylum exhausted and in very bad shape. He says many children are severely malnourished and in need of special therapeutic feeding.
We identify more than 1,000 children, which is a very high proportion to the number of people who have actually crossed the border, which seems to indicate that, obviously, and as we imagine, that a lot of people have left under a lot of stress and in a hurry for their protection.
Fontaine says only about 10% of these children have been reunited with their families. He says this is a very low rate, but UNICEF is working with other agencies, both inside the CAR and in the countries of refuge, to trace the children's families. He says concern is rising about the risk of diseases such as malaria and cholera as the rainy season begins. He tells VOA the window for positioning food and other relief supplies before the rains hit hard in July is narrowing.
We're prepositioning cholera treatment capacity, for example, in some areas, because we might have that. We're prepositioning ready-to-use therapeutic food. So we're doing it. I hope we will have time and means to do it sufficiently and in sufficient quantities, because it's true that the roads are going to be extremely hard to use.
The United Nations says hundreds of thousands of victims of the CAR's brutal civil war are in desperate straits. It says they are struggling to restart their lives in countries that are as impoverished as their own, and they need help. The UN says money is needed to provide shelter, food, water and sanitation, health and basic needs. UNICEF says money also is needed for education, so children who have been uprooted from their homes can recover a bit of normality in their lives. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister has expressed concern that the conflict in neighboring Central African Republic could threaten the security of the entire region. Lambert Mendes says the government in Kinshasa is working with other countries in the region to help stabilize the security situation in the CAR. Mendes tells reporter Peter Clotty that a battalion of soldiers from the National Army, FARDC, is helping to stabilize the security situation in the CAR.
We are more concerned about that conflict because we share 1,600 kilometers of border with the Central African Republic. So whatever can happen there can impact our security. That is why We are very eager to bring in our contribution in stabilizing or trying to stabilize the situation over there. That is why we sent a battalion of soldiers and a full unit of plainclothes policemen to help.
There are also concerns that the refugees running from the country are coming to your country seeking refuge. How are you dealing with the refugee situation?
We have no other way of dealing but accommodating them in conformity with international law. We are working closely with the UN Higher Commission for Refugee to help those guys and take them away from the border. That is what we are doing.
I heard that your government has also called for more international help to expedite the process of protecting the unarmed civilians as well as trying to find a solution to the problem. What can you tell me about this?
That is a position that is shared by all African Union states. So we need really that these forces that have been settled already by Security Council be operational as soon as possible and bring in more elements to help stabilize the situation.
What about countries that are members of the Central African States? What role do you see now? Do you think the group is being effective in helping Central African Republic in resolving this conflict?
Of course, we are trying now to stabilize. It is more a question of stabilizing the security situation than any other thing. Our troops are many times called to separate these rival factions that are fighting here and there. And they are also working with the population to assist them because we share cultures, we share languages. So it is very easy for us to deal with the trying to help when comes the time of negotiating between groups.
Lambert Mende is DRC's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kinshasa. The director of Virunga National Park in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo is in critical but stable condition after being shot while traveling from the park to nearby Goma earlier this week. Emmanuel de Mero has just launched the Virunga Alliance, an effort to create 60,000 local jobs through sustainable use of resources. A spokesperson for the park, Joanne Natasigara, tells Ricky Shryak that De Mero will be eager to continue his work once he recovers.
The whole team is incredibly shocked that something like this would happen to Emmanuel. Yeah, it's a real surprise.
Is there any idea who is responsible for the attack?
So we have no information on the attackers or their motives, and obviously we're deeply concerned. We hope the authorities are looking into it.
So there's no knowledge whether it was an armed group such as perhaps M23 or a group of poachers?
We have no information whatsoever on the identity of the attackers.
And when was the last time a violence like this broke out in the park?
Yeah, I could say it depends what you mean by violence breaking out in the park. Certainly, this is a targeted attack, or so it seems. And so, you know, this has never happened to Emmanuel before. But rangers are frequently...
I'm sorry, you said rangers are frequently targeted, correct?
Yes.
By poachers?
Various different people.
You guys do believe these people were aiming for Mr. De Mero?
We believe so, but it's obviously difficult to say at this time.
How is he doing health-wise? I read that he's critical but stable.
He is stable, yes. He's in a much more stable state this morning.
And how long has Mr. De Mero been with the park?
He's worked with Virunga National Park for over 20 years. He's been the park director since 2007, but he worked in the park prior to that for many years. I would add that, you know, it's important to remember that Emmanuel is very committed to Eastern Congo and that Virunga National Park was in the process, the beginning part of a very exciting new stage of development called Virunga Alliance, which was launched last week in Goma. It's a 10-year plan that it really is a brainchild of Emmanuel de Mero's to bring peace and prosperity to the region.
Joanne Natasigara is spokesperson for Virunga National Park in the Democratic Republic of Congo. She was speaking with Ricky Shryak from New York. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 17th, And please send your comments and opinions to DaybreakAfrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Sudan People's Liberation Army officials have acknowledged that anti-government forces have seized the Unity State capital, Bentiu. The government is also suggesting that the opposition may have received support from neighboring Khartoum, a charge that the rebel forces vehemently denied. Lucy Pony has more for VOA from Nairobi.
SPLA spokesperson Colonel Philip Aguer confirmed to Al Jazeera and other news outlets that the opposition has taken control of Bentiu after 3 days of fighting in and around the town. The anti-government side announced it took control of Bentiu yesterday. The government spokesperson Michael Makwe-Lueth says fighting continued throughout the morning and insisted the government will regain control.
We will either recover it today or tomorrow, fully. These are people who have decided to go against the cessation of hostilities, and we have ever been clear that rebels are people who never respect agreements. So it is not strange that they again violated the cessation of hostilities.
The anti-government forces accused the SPLA of prompting the latest round of fighting last week when they attacked their positions in Unity State. Makwe says there appears to be evidence that the opposition forces marched on Bentiu from Sudan, but they are still investigating whether Khartoum has been providing assistance to the anti-government side. James Gadet Dak, the spokesperson for opposition leader Riek Machar, says those accusations are completely false.
No, this is not true. They are the ones who have an agreement with Sudan. They have cooperation agreement. Salva Kiir last week visited Khartoum and met President Bashir to follow up on the implementation of such agreements, including security arrangements at the border. Now, how come they turn around to allege that we receive support or training from Sudan? We don't receive support from any country, including Sudan.
The rebels have acknowledged that part of the strategy behind their ongoing fighting is disrupting the country's oil production. They have given all oil workers a deadline of 1 week to leave the country's oil production facilities. Fighting broke out around one oil refinery just outside Bentiu earlier this week. Makwe says extent of damage at the new facility is unclear at this time.
They came with the intention of destroying the oil facility and the refinery, and they left. So they have done some destruction and they abandoned the place. Of course, it is a setback because the refinery should have been open at the end of this month.
Makwe says so far they have not received any other reports of attacks on other oil facilities in the state. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi.
Election experts say 80% of voting results in African elections are contested because of flaws in the democratic process. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon, where experts have gathered to make recommendations to improve the process.
African elections are prone to violence, corruption, and manipulation, and experts say democratic systems need to be strengthened in order to make voting more free and fair on the continent. At a conference in Yaoundé, experts like Tambetiko Christopher with Cameroon's National Electoral Commission says prime examples of flaws can be found in the ethnic violence that surrounded Kenya's vote in 2007, post-election violence on the Democratic Republic of Congo in 2011, and political instability when the losing presidential candidate refused to concede following elections in Ivory Coast 3 years ago.
The system of elections we have been organizing in Africa is not working. That is why you find more than 80% of elections being disputed. You find people say elections were manipulated, elections were rigged. This has become a preponderant phenomenon which we have to deal with.
Mpo Motwage from the University of South Africa says countries often push elections as a way to fast-track democratic credentials. But it does not work unless the institutions, which are the foundation of democracy, are in place. He notes recent election campaigns have actually produced the opposite results, military coups, such as in Mali and Guinea-Bissau in 2012.
Africa should learn from the Spring Revolution in the north, and the African people and the African masses are looking forward to credible governments, to governments that are elected by the people for the people.
Common elements in free elections, experts note, include an independent media, judiciary, a non-politicized military, free flow of information for an informed citizenry, and transparency. Motuagi notes it is not just fragile democracies that need better election processes, but dictatorial regimes are at risk due to mass discontent.
One cannot allow a situation like that one in Zimbabwe, like that one, where a person for over 3 or 4 decades actually continues to be a ruler, or that the ruling party continues to be dominant without any further development in the people's democracies.
Zimbabwe has held several elections, the most recent in 2013, but Western and international rights groups note that the ruling party under President Robert Mugabe uses pervasive voter intimidation, violence, vote rigging, and does not allow transparent monitoring. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaounde.
The former chairman of Liberia's last transitional government, who played a pivotal role in guiding the country from wartime to the election of Africa's first female president, has died. Judith Bryant passed away Wednesday at the John F. Kennedy Medical Center in Monrovia after a protracted illness. He was 65. Bryant led Liberia's sixth interim government from October 2003 to January 2006 as the consensus choice of the three major warring factions at the time. Chief Cyril Alling is chairman emeritus of the National Patriotic Party of former President Charles Taylor. He tells me the late Bryant was a level-headed and good-temperament individual who worked closely with the country's warring factions and the United Nations to transition Liberia to democratic elections in 2005.
He played the positive role of a transitional leader. He did not have enough time to a period of 2 years to make any significant impact. But the role he played was the role he should have played to transition the country to a democratic elections. He did that successfully, and I think he has a lot of accolades for that. Regarding his illness, he's been sick for a protracted period of time. And it is regrettable that most of the friends he made, even in the African sub-region, not even the Liberian government, made any significant efforts to ensure that he got proper medical attention.
He served at a time that Liberia was coming out of the war with all the different warring factions, and you being somebody with former President Charles Taylor, why do you think that Judith Bryant was selected to be the interim leader?
I think he was nominated, an acceptable candidate by the three warring parties, including former President Taylor, supported his nomination. He was an acceptable candidate, a neutral person who was not involved in any of the warring parties or warring faction, and hailed from a political party. So I think that was the basis upon which he was nominated, and he was an acceptable candidate by Lord, Model, and the governor of Liberia, the three factions that were involved in the selection process.
Some people even refer to him as the father of today's democracy in Liberia, especially the role he played in bringing about the 2005 elections.
He had no muscle, he had no army, he had no security to perpetuate himself in power, even if he wanted to. His role was to transition the country into democratic rule, working along with the international community and the United Nations. And I think he was level-headed. He had a good temperament. Many times he was frustrated because the warring factions, the warring parties were dominant characters, including the governor of Liberia, which we were leaders of. But he kept his cool. I think he was level-headed and had a good temperament and was willing to work along with the international community to bring some semblance of peace and democracy back to Liberia. He will go down in history as one of the champions of the peace and democracy that we enjoy today.
There's a saying that it's good to give someone their flowers to smell them while that person is still alive. Looking back on the life of Judith Bryant, do you think Liberia did give him his flowers to smell while he was alive?
Well, I don't want to be critical because, you know, not being a part of the government of the day, people might think that I'm just being critical about it. But I don't think he was given the type of recognition that he should have been giving. I don't think he was given the type of support and accommodation that he should have had as a transitional leader.
That was Chief Cyril Alling, Chairman Emeritus of the National Patriotic Party of former President Charles Taylor. He was speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. It is time now for Daybreak Africa. I suppose here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with football. Kenya's under-20 team bounced back from a 2-0 deficit to draw 3-all with their visiting Italian peers in a friendly match played in Nairobi, Kenya on Wednesday. Elsewhere, Namibia is pulling out all the stops to ensure they host a successful 2014 Africa Women's Championship in October. The contest is Africa's qualifier for the 2015 FIFA Women's World Cup. The Namibia Football Association Secretary General Barry Rukoro explains what hosting this event means to them.
It will be the first time that Namibia is hosting any event of continental proportion. We feel very humbled as a nation and as a football association and the entire football family in our country. We realize that it is a big responsibility that we have accepted to do that on behalf of the continent. We are really, as a nation and as an association and as a football family, we are going out of our way to put forward our best foot. A lot of groundwork is going on, but we also want to thank the government of the Republic of Namibia for the support that they are giving to this competition. I really want to specifically thank the Minister of Sport, who went to Cabinet to defend the budget and to defend the position that the association put forward to him for Namibia to host this competition. We will finally arrive as a big player in the African football landscape by hosting competitions of this nature. We hope that we will do such a good job that both CAF and the government of the Republic will find justification to give Namibia the possibility to host another competition again going forward.
That was Barry Rukoro, the Namibia Football Association Secretary General, speaking in Johannesburg, South Africa. Turning to athletics, the Russian city of Kazan will stage the 2016 IAAF World Junior Athletics Championships, the World Athletics Governing Body IAAF revealed in Dakar, Senegal on Wednesday. This year's contest will be staged in Eugene, Oregon State in the United States of America in July. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, April 17th.
The activities of terrorist groups like Boko Haram, Ansaru, Ombose, Fulani Castle Rustlers, and other armed groups like OPC, MASOP, kidnappers, pipeline vandals, cultists in schools, etc., are becoming a big threat to the nation-state Nigeria. And if the federal government of Nigeria did not do something very fast and quick, these bandits that name and kill will be a threat to us come 2015 general elections. Let's act now. I am Okechukwu Ajaka of Ezeka family on the Shadow Kingdom, Anambra State, southeast of Nigeria. Thank you, VOA.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. That's it for this Thursday, April 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post-editor Mark Ouma, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very lovely Thursday.
African Music Mix.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. North to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Tune in from 0 to 300 hours UTC and from 11 to 1300 hours UTC every single day on The Voice of America. I'll be back.